From building a business we're talking about to creating best-in-class client experiences, we're here to explore what it takes to make sure you're top of mind and get the referral every time. Join me as I interview some of the most innovative and inspiring business owners in the online space and discover how you can create more opportunities to ensure your clients are thrilled with your work and make you the obvious choice to send their friends to. It's time to stop going it alone and start transforming your star power into staying power. I'm Dusty Arab, and you're listening to Referral Worthy. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome back, everybody, to Referral Worthy. I'm your host, Dusty Arab, and today we have the immaculate, the genius, Lacey Boggs. She is the director of the Content Direction Agency and the founder of Thought Leader Lab, and just has been a stalwart in the content creation space for as long as I've been on the internet. So, Lacey, welcome. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, okay. So, first up, I would love for you to tell me about the current iteration of your biz, your business. Give me all the details of what's going on right now.
Well, we are in a place of, I say we, it's just me at this point, and I am in a place of transition.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, that's it. In the year of our Lord, 2025, that is transition. But right now, what I'm focusing on is leading small business owners into their thought leadership and showing people how a stronger signal will break through the noise in terms of content marketing. So really helping people get clear on their big idea and helping them present it in a way that breaks through the noise, because there's so much just junk on social media and in our inboxes. My hypothesis right now is that better ideas are the way to break through, and helping people get clearer on what they're saying and how they're saying it to get noticed and get more leads and business is the goal.
God, I love that so much for so many reasons. Like, it's so easy for people to talk about how, you know, everyone just wants things shorter. It's got to be TikTok size. It's got to be a Vine, whatever. But there have always been a contingent of people interested in that deeper long form content. Like, I always point out, wait, but why? As like somebody who just like from the get go is just like, no, fuck off. Like, I'm going to do it my way. And I mean, and I've had the benefit of seeing some of the work that is coming out of Thought Leader Lab. And like, it's just immaculate what you're pulling out of people.
Thanks. Yeah.
I'm totally going to put Lydia Kitz here on the spot because she's been on the podcast already. But she was just like, she needed somebody to help her close the loop at the end of it. And just to like get things wrapped up. But like the way that everything's laid out in there, your templates, like whatever it is that you're doing, is so like, I'm not a designer by trade the way that Lydia is, but it was so easy for me to follow along the entire way through and to see how this was relevant, not just for her current clientele, but anybody who works with her in the future. Like, it really was stunning.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Good. That's the goal, is to really break it down and help people. Because what I find is that my people are idea rich and time poor. Capacity poor. And they're being told over and over again, more. Because you can say shorter, you can say TikTok, you can say reels, right? You can say soundbite, but that means there has to be more. Like that, that's the other flip side of that coin, right? If you're only producing short form content, you have to produce a crap ton of it to play with the algorithm. And so my people tend to be like solopreneurs or with a very small team. And they don't have time to be a full-time marketer on the other side of that. And so, you know, what we're trying to accomplish is like, hey, you've got these big ideas. You don't know how to put them into anything, right? Like, they're just too big. They don't fit into a tweet. They don't fit into a reel. They don't even fit into an email necessarily. So how do I provide them with the tools and the frameworks to get them laid out in a way that they almost have to explain it to themselves, my people, and then they can explain it to their people, right? It's like, oh, once I figure out what the through line is, what the big idea is, how I'm going to explain it, everything else becomes easy. Because when you have the big piece, you can chop it into a zillion reels much more easily than just going, oh God, what am I going to post today, right? So once we get that foundational piece settled, they have a much easier time promoting themselves and finding the right folks. And, you know, it's not even about necessarily producing, like I tend to encourage people to produce a long form piece of content that they publish. But even if they never publish it, the act of writing it is transformational, or creating it in whatever sense. Cool.
Absolutely. When I was working on my talk last year for Reinvented, I mean, I was giving the keynote and I'd never given a keynote before. I've taught a ton of workshops. And so just like the different format was like, and like before I could even write the talk, I basically had to go through that same process. Like I had to clarify those ideas through like, had to just take it through the sieve over and over and over again in order to actually get that thing that I wanted to keep sharing. And it's absolutely worth the time investment.
Right, right. And it is, it's work. You got to put in the work. I can't do it for you. But that's kind of the point. Like one of the reasons I leaned into thought leadership as I've been making these transitions is it's something that AI can't do. AI right. cannot create your thought leadership for you. It can be a thought partner. It can like bounce ideas back at you. It can help you brainstorm. There's lots of ways it can help in the process, but it can't actually come up with your big idea for you. So I thought if I can be the guide as well through this process of thought leadership development, then that's something that the computer, our robot overlords can't quite take away.
God, is that? Yeah, that is absolutely the truth. Because like, if you've even tried to go there with AI, you find out real quick, like, absolutely not.
Well, I mean, and I'm not anti-AI. I have strong opinions about it, that I'm not against it fully. It's just that like, by its nature, it is regurgitating other people's thoughts. So
totally.
That's what it is, right? That's literally what it is. So it can't come up with the new thing that you've come up with in your own experience.
I saw that Sonia Simone, I think last week, was on LinkedIn and talking about, she was like, I don't sound like AI. AI sounds like me because they're trained on all of our shit. And oh my God, the way that I resonated with that. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's why I don't have a problem using it to fill in like my transitions and stuff so that I don't have to like spend so much time on those. But it's, yeah, it absolutely come up with like the big like knuckle punch ideas that like you need to, you know, that continue to build your brand over time.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, that's really what we're doing. And I hope to get some more people. I hope to have a whole new class of thought leaders this year because it's just such important work. Everybody who's come to me, and this is, sounds like a humble brag, but it's really more like, oh my God, I'm so excited by these people. But everybody who's come through the doors of Thought Leader Labs have had such incredible ideas. And I'm like, God, I'm so lucky that I get to help nurture these ideas and get them out into the world because they're so needed. It's so important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Okay. So you had mentioned that you're in a place of transition. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing that reflected in everyone, every business owner that I'm talking to right now. Almost all of them are having to iterate and change in some way, shape, or form, like unless you're in a really traditional industry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would love to see, like, hear from you as somebody who's been in the marketing space for so long. Like, it is April of 2025 right now. What are, like, the trends, follies, opportunities? What are you seeing right now?
Yeah, so I think, I don't know where it originated. I think it was an article, but people have talked about a trust recession. And I think we are in one. And so I think in terms of marketing, building trust is more important than ever. People have been burned in different ways, right? So like they've either been, you know, they bought something that didn't deliver, or they just generally are feeling untrusting of the world right now that we live in, et cetera, et cetera. So like building trust with your marketing is paramount. I think it always has been, but we've gone through periods where there've been like shortcuts, and now is not a shortcut time. So like one of the reasons I'm encouraging people to create long-form pieces of content is because you can create that trust and that buy-in before somebody ever even gives you their email address, for example. So like they can come binge on your content, get to know you. It's the same reason you have a podcast, right? People can come binge on your content and get to know you and trust you before they ever decide to work with you. That is very, very important in terms of if you want to sell anything more than, you know, $500 offer. People's trust is low. And then I think the other thing that I've noticed, and I've seen this borne out by a couple of other marketers that I admire and trust, while people are more hesitant to invest in really high ticket things right now, they are buying lower ticket things and they might be still making up the same customer value over multiple purchases, right? So if I used to sell a $10,000 program or whatever it is, that might not be selling very well anymore, but I can sell multiple smaller things and the lifetime customer value will still end up being $10,000. That kind of idea, right? Mm-hmm. So having smaller bite offers, having a really clear funnel that people can upsell from one thing to the next seems to be what's working right this minute. And that could change tomorrow.
That's exactly what I've been experiencing and seeing too. Like anything that's small, templates, case for offers that lead into whatever the main offer is. Like, and I'm really, it feels like the cap there for most people that I'm seeing is like right about $2,000. Like getting people to spend more than $2,000 right now, it like, I mean, I don't know anybody who is like actively pulling retainers right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really tricky because nobody knows what the fuck is going to come tomorrow. Like our commander in craziness is changing the rules every other minute. And so regardless of what your business is, you're going to be affected one way or another, right? Like
right.
Even you and I who don't have overhead in terms of like shipping products or something like that, we're still going to be affected because the products we buy in our personal life are going to be more expensive or
yeah,
our clients are going to be affected or whatever it is, right? There's this huge trickle down. So we're all engaged in this guessing what's going to happen tomorrow. And I think that's where that trust piece comes in. I think too, if you can, you've probably seen this too, but a lot of messaging I'm seeing right now is like recession proof your business and how can, you know, how to survive, whatever. And I'm not sure that's the vibe.
I don't think it is either.
Nobody knows. Like we could talk about what worked in the last recession we went through. I think you and I both have lived through recessions.
Several at this point. Yeah. Like
we're millennials. This is different. And so I'm not sure that kind of like, oh, I've been there before, I can tell you what's going to happen is really the vibe. So maybe it's just more like the message might be more around like understanding what your clients are doing or shoring up your foundations or whatever. But it's not necessarily like recession proof your business.
Right. Yeah. I recently released something on client experience as a freebie and mm-hmm. like, and it got picked up so fast by not just like individuals, but by a handful of folks running summits, because mm-hmm. like that's something that I can control as a business owner, right? Like
yeah.
I might not be able to control who sees what I've got going on, but I can make sure that as soon as they enter my area, mm-hmm. that everything there goes exactly as planned. And yeah, I completely agree. I don't like the language around recession proofing, especially in this climate, especially like if God forbid you work with like people with product-based businesses right now, like, oh my God, I would be just, I can't even fathom.
I'd be rocking in the corner.
Yeah, absolutely not. Anybody working with those folks, you have my sympathy. So building trust, focusing on what we can control, that all makes sense. Do you feel like anything is like not being said right now? Like what's the undercurrent feeling like?
I mean, so I'm focused a lot on people's ideas and the messaging that they're putting out there. And I think we're reaching a tipping point with things like plug and play template, especially for the more seasoned business owner, because what I'm seeing is, especially for content marketing. So I'll say that I'll put that caveat out there. But like, if you say, I'm going to give you whatever, 5 gazillion Facebook posts that you can post, like, we don't need that anymore because we've got AI. So the next game is going to be, and I'm seeing this already, is like, you know, AI prompts, how to get those things from an AI prompt. But again, that's not going to distinguish you. That's not going to help you stand out. That's not your differentiator. So if you're using the same AI prompts, you're going to get the same result. It's like when our feeds were suddenly full of people in the Barbie boxes because the new ChatGPT image generator had, like, if you're doing that for fun, hooray, go do that for fun. But like, I saw so many business owners using the ChatGPT Barbie image of themselves or the Muppet. Oh, the Muppet one was big too. And it's like, hey, as soon as I notice it's a trend, it's dead.
Right.
I mean, I'm chronically online, but you know, still the minute I notice it's a trend, it's dead. And I feel like AI prompts for content are the same kind of thing. Like you're going to get the same stuff out that you put in. So the answer is not going to be more templates. It's not going to be more prompts. It's going to be digging a little deeper, finding your own differentiator, and then feeding that maybe to the AI for ideas, but not relying on like, oh, I bought a series of prompts that's going to fill out my content calendar for the next month or whatever, because that's just not going to get noticed.
It's right. Really
just, I came up with this great phrase, productivity cosplay. That's what it is. It's productivity cosplay because you feel like you're doing your marketing. You can like check that box off your list. Oh, I posted something. But is it actually doing any good? No.
Right. Honestly. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's transition a little bit. And I want to ask you a little bit more about like some of your more historic business time here. So what is something you had to learn the hard way?
All the things? Does that count?
Something I had to learn the hard way is to trust my gut, trust my instinct.
Probably my only regret, if we could call it that, of the last 10, 12 years in business is that I spent a lot of money on coaches because I felt like I needed somebody to tell me what to do. I didn't trust my own instinct and my own gut. And don't get me wrong, I have worked with some incredible coaches over the years and I don't regret them individually, like that's fine, but I regret the cumulative amount of money and time I've spent with coaches over the past 10 years because I think if I had developed that skill of trusting myself and going with my gut earlier, that would have been would have turned a higher ROI, let's say.
It's funny you and I share that in common.
Yeah.
Just all the way that through line. I would like that money back, please.
Like I said, some of my coaching, amazing. Don't regret that time at all, but just cumulatively.
Yeah. I don't feel like I ever in any coaching situation got what I paid for.
Yeah. And that's tricky because like, I think I also didn't understand, and this is just like me, but I didn't understand at the beginning the difference between a coach and a consultant. And I really should have been investing more in consultants.
Completely agree. Like I wanted somebody who was actually going to give me something useful and not just like ask me about my feelings. I'm like, I'm pretty self-aware.
I'm good with that part.
Yeah, honestly. All right. So you guys have heard it here. If you think you need to spend money on a coach, therapy costs less, and then go hire a consultant.
Also, like, if you think you need to spend money on a coach, ask yourself what about their marketing is resonating with you. And if you can put your finger on it, you may be able to like say, oh, it's just because they're really good at that. It's really because they're really good at why. It's because they have this scarcity thing that they're doing, or they have this luxury thing that they're doing, or they have this, there's this thing that they have that I want.
I see their life and that's the thing that I'm going after. And so if I spend time with them, I will get that. Like, bitch, no, you won't. That person has a rich husband who's funding all her shit.
Oh my God, that's so true.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. It's kind of on the same lines. Like, have you had any like business failures Well, I mean, like, of course we have. We all.
Yeah.
But has there been one in particular that you feel like you really took some lessons from?
Well, I mean, the thing that comes straight to mind is like, I had to shut down my agency at the end of 2023. And that was huge. And it felt like a failure, whether we want to classify it as such, like objectively or not, in my body, in my soul, it felt like a huge failure. And I carried, and I still probably carry, a lot of shame around it because it felt like, oh, if I have to shut down this thing I've been doing for the past 10 years, therefore it must be a failure. And therefore it must be a reflection on me as a human being and my worth and et cetera, right? Going back to that therapy thing. So like, but what I learned is that A, it doesn't kill you. You're not going to die when you have a business deal. B, like there, I can see now that there are some things I did that a straight up capitalist business consultant would have told me not to do that I do not regret. One of them being like, I paid my writers better than average. I don't regret that. Like, could we have hung on a little longer if I hadn't done? Maybe. But like, I don't regret giving those people a living wage and, you know, like helping them take care of their kids and their families and their whatever. Like I had one of my writers 1 month come to me and say, my full career, I've wanted to make X dollars a month and I just did it working for you. And I've had somebody come and be like, oh my God, we're empty nesters now and we've been wanting to redo the whatever. And I was just able to put in new flooring because of you. I was tangibly making other people's lives better. I don't regret the fact that, like, I chose to do something that maybe in the long run contributed to the end of that business. Like, I think the biggest lesson I took away from it is I'd rather be a good human than a good business person.
You know what? And we need more of that. Like, honestly, like, I was just talking to Ben Casebolt last week about this. Like, her podcast is called Aggressively Human. Like,
yeah, and yeah, great.
I know. I feel like we're all kind of in the same vein in that regard. Like, mm-hmm. I was reading something the other day. I can't remember where it was, but somebody was talking about, like, one of the greatest failures that we have right now in the 21st century is that, like, somebody assumes that if it doesn't last forever, it wasn't worth doing. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, the older I get, the more I resonate so much with that idea. Because, like, some things have a shelf life. And that's part of what gives them value. It's why, you know, we love certain series the way we do. It's why a bunch of us are afraid the next season of Ted Lasso is going to suck. Like,
did it jump the shark? Like, are we quitting? But I totally agree. And I think that's something I've had to work through, because the shame was coming from some kind of external place. Like, I should feel ashamed because this fell apart, that I couldn't continue this forever and ever and ever. But I had a good 10-year run. Like, I did pretty well compared to a lot of people. When you look at the statistics, you know, like,
oh yeah,
most businesses fail within the first year or two, and most women-owned businesses fail. You know what I'm saying? So, like, we're doing great,
honestly. Well, and for what it's worth, like, looking back on it, shuttering my agency after my best year in business was the best decision I could have ever made for my family and mental health.
Right. Like, so, I mean, there's so many reasons to do it that don't have any, like, okay, I didn't scale, I didn't sell, I didn't, like, get bought out, whatever, but that maybe that wasn't what was meant to happen. And my friend Helen Tremethick, we were talking about this recently, she pointed out something really interesting, because we were talking about the idea of getting side jobs to carry you through a slow period of time when you're a business owner or a freelancer or whatever it is. And she's working at the library. I was joking that I put in an application at Crate and Barrel because we used to work there and I enjoyed it as a kid. And I was like, well, this wouldn't be a terrible way to, like, gloss over a few low months, you know? And she was saying there's something so classist about the way we put emphasis on certain types of work over others. And, like, why is it automatically better or worse to do X type of job or not? And I know you have strong feelings about these kinds of things too, because, like, we've had conversations, but, like, you know, we put these things on ourselves that are so external. Like, why is it a failure to shut this down? Why is it a failure to say, I'm going to take a part-time job for a little while? Why is it a failure to do XYZ when really not? There's nothing wrong with any of those things.
Absolutely. Well, and, like, I mean, I know more people who have either gone back to traditional work or tried to over the past, I would say, since, like, mid-2023, when mm-hmm. the COVID money started to run out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, like, we've seen, like, waves of people come and go from our particular corner of the internet before. But yeah, I think especially right now when, you know, when white collar work is completely being turned on its head, and, like, all the federal workers entering the workforce now, and all these other things going on, things that used to be a sure bet just aren't the way that they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reality is that a lot more of us are going to be taking those side jobs. Like, I mean, I'm fully on, like, a full fucking side quest right now with my little turning my backyard into a farm project.
I know about it.
That's a conversation for another day for sure. But, like, I am like, literally being like, you know what? Like, I'm going to go be a farmer for the summer. And that's, like, that is, I'm not even joking. It is half of my revenue plan right now for the next 6 months, because I got the numbers of what the market was doing. And I was like, oh, maybe I should take my little hobby situation a little more seriously, which is just, like, it's wild, because, again, we just tend to devalue different
kinds
of
labor or whatever it is. And, like, I also thought, like, how refreshing and different would it be for me after a decade to go to a job where you leave the job at the job and, like, come home and have spoons for creative work that I want to do.
Right.
That's another piece of the math I'm doing here. Like, you know, there's other things I do. And if all of my creativity is used up on the business, there's nothing left over for the other
business,
things I do.
Other people's projects. Right. Yeah. That was, I mean, when I stopped doing copywriting for several years, that was exactly why I was like, I only have the spoons for this many hours of this level of work. and like, I'm not going to turn out shit. And I also like, I just got so resentful. And I ended up taking a full-time gig for a year and a half and eventually coming back to my business when COVID hit. And I wouldn't have done it any other way, to be honest. Like, I needed to just be able to like single focus for
that. Yeah.
It was nice.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And sometimes I think when the market is so topsy-turvy the way it is right now, like, you know, it's been true since I started this business that you could get a copywriter for anywhere from $5 to $50,000 for the same type of project, right? I mean, and I'm only a little bit exaggerating. And it's so odd to be like looking at those sorts of things now, like public postings, and just going, holy moly, I don't want to go back into that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to. Somebody sent me a job posting. This is a sidebar, but I think you'll enjoy it. Somebody sent me a job posting from a dude I don't know, but he acted like he was a big deal. So I'm going to assume he had the big deal in whatever corner of the internet he lives in. And he was posting it for junior copywriters. And he was going to pay a flat rate of $3,000 a month, which sounds okay at the beginning. But then I realized as I read the job description, there was no limit to how much work he was going to ask you for. So you were going to get a flat $3,000 a month for God knows how much copy. And then basically it said, if you survive a year, you can come on as a full-time copywriter and you'll get a raise and all the perks that go along with it. And I was just like,
I mean, I'll take it as long as I'm allowed to use fucking AI.
Right.
God. Men.
But that's kind of the world we're living in right now. So it's a very interesting, tricky time to find your footing. Like, what's next? What are we pushing to?
Yeah, I do feel like those of us who have been in this work are at a very particular advantage right now. Because like, we're used to being scrappy. We're used to adapting quickly. We're used to figuring out how to sell to make this stuff work. But so I guess actually on those lines, like so we have a lot of like newer small business owners who listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. And what advice would you give those folks?
I think the strongest and most important thing you can do as a new business owner is figure out what your differentiator is. What makes you different? Why would somebody spend money on you as opposed to your closest competitor? And to be very clear, I don't really believe in competitors, quote unquote. Like, I believe there's big enough pie. We just make more pie. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like we have to fight tooth and nail over it. But if your clients don't know why they should pick you over the next person, they're not going to, right? So you need to be really clear on it. I was having a conversation with a friend recently. And I had put together a workbook for a workshop I was running, and I sent it to her to look at. And she said, the first question knocked me on my ass. And I was like, what? Because I've been in business for 10 years. And your first question was, what problem do you solve? And I couldn't answer it. I was like, okay, well, that could be why you're having problems marketing.
Good.
Because it seems so fundamental, but a lot of people don't know the answer to that question. And so like, if you don't, get clear on it, get really clear on it. And then you can tell other people. And then, I mean, going back to like your referral process, like that's how other people refer you, is when they know exactly what your differentiator is. So that would be my best advice for a new business owner, is get super duper clear on that and then double down on it. Make that your foundation of everything.
Amen. Fucking men. And if you pivot, and you will, then you can do it again.
You get to do it. Yep.
Which should all be encouragement and discouragement that statement is loaded with.
Yeah.
We're going to go slightly over here because like, I'm just like having the best time with you. Okay. What are you binging lately? Like, what are you obsessed with right now?
Am I obsessed with? Like in a business sense or just in general?
No, just in general. Like what's obsession worthy right now?
Okay. So there is the series of books that by T. Kingfisher, and it's, I can't remember what the series is called, Paladin something, but the first one is like Paladin Space. They are romantic-y, sort of, and they are, all of the characters are in their middle age, so late 30s into 40s,
God.
Right? Many of the women and men are like not your typical romance novel body type, so like bigger bodies, bigger people, not traditionally beautiful,
which not just sausage sized peens.
Yeah. Also Meg would laugh at me really hard, but like they're the right level of spice for me. I'm not like into full on erotica. I'm fine with some spice, but I'm like, worth it. Let's just have some story too. And I just love the world. I love the fantasy world that they've built here. And so I just like literally read four of them in about a week. So.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay. Well, that will definitely be in the show notes here then, because I'm also probably just going to go acquire them for myself.
Yeah, they're delightful. And actually, I've loved everything I've read of her. Some of her stuff tends more toward like the horror, but not like in a bloody kind of way, more like, ooh, that was creepy. But these are not horror. These are just more romanticy.
Love it. All right. Last question. What makes something referral worthy to you?
What makes something referral worthy is when you can be in a completely different, like a completely different situation. You're not necessarily networking or whatever. And somebody goes, oh, this. And you're like, I have exactly the thing that will fix your problem. Like our friend Meg talks about love at first search. It's that same feeling where it's like, I know how to fix your problem and it's my friend Dusty or whatever it is, right? So that's what makes something referral worthy to me. And I think it goes back to that differentiation piece, because it's when you recognize in the other person what their problem is and you know that you have the referral that will fix the problem. So when those two pieces line up, that's what makes something really easy to refer, because you know exactly who it's for, you know exactly what the problem is that they have, and you know that the person you're referring can.
Amazing. Ladies, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. And everybody, all of Lacey's contact info is going to be right down here below the episode. I'm doing this like there's going to be video, but this is only an audio podcast right now. So I'll turn that into a reel for everybody.
Right.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks.
You've been listening to Referral Worthy. If you're ready to get more business from the clients who already love you, you need my Client Experience Pack. It's a collection of templates designed to help you create a referral-worthy experience from first touch to final invoice. Find it at thereinvention.co/CEP.